Hello, hello, and shalom. This is your host, Barry Phillips, for Reconnect. And it is my delight to reconnect with you. It's been a bit of a challenge and a wild ride of the last year. And so programming has been a little on the challenge side, but the Father is bringing us to a good place for those who have felt so inclined over the last year to intercede for me and my family. It has been much needed and much appreciated. We have had struggles, victories, challenges, and overcomings. It's been a wonderful thing to watch the Father's hand reach into challenging and even dark places and bring light and health and healing. And we are very, very thankful to be where we are. So for those that are listening, that you have likewise had such challenges, be very well aware you're not the only one. It doesn't really matter what level of walk that you have or what location you may be walking in. All of us together have such challenges, and it does very much pay off for you and I to intercede one for the other. Currently, Laura and I are in Florida on vacation, having had an opportunity to minister at the Kohah Mashiach congregation in Lake City, Florida, at the Refresh Conference. And this was the parting conference for Gloria and Frank Bloomfield, exceptional people. And they're moving on to a different phase of life and a different role in ministry. And I just want to give a shout out to them because they are extremely special people and have been very, very influential in many lives. So we're here now in Jacksonville, Florida on business, and it's raining. We come to Florida to see sunshine, and it's raining. Oh, well. So I have a word for you today taken from the book of Bereshit, chapter number 13. I've recently did a teaching on this and will probably be borrowing from the recording of that teaching and putting it on our website. But it's about the idea that you and I need to elevate our vision and stop looking at things at the temporal, earthly, physical realm level, at least in the predominant fashion. Now, that's much, much easier said than done. But if you and I can come to the place, as this teaching is going to encourage us, of elevating our vision and seeing things at a different place, it is going to take us to a different place. So let's go to Bereshit, or Genesis chapter 13, and set the scene for some very important verses that we'll read in just a moment. It would seem then that Avram, not yet called Abraham, Avram and Lot, his nephew, have come out of Mitzrayim after this episode where Pharaoh has taken Sarai to his harem and has wanted to make her his wife. Yah extracted them out of all of that, brought them out, which is a setting of the footprints of future generations to come out of Mitzrayim, spoiling those that have been their adversaries and those that have opposed them. So likewise, Abraham's future generations are going to experience something very, very similar. That said, Avram and Lot come out, and they are very much increased in goods. So as they enter in again to the land where they have been more apt to dwell, we find that the land simply can't hold the both of them. There's too much need of water and not enough water supply, too much need of pasture land and not enough to go around. So the herdsmen of these two men are contending for the choice spots, the best spots, water rights, land rights, who gets what, and it spills over and begins to tax the relationship of Avram and Lot. Avram being very magnanimous here says to Lot, look, let's not argue about this. Let's not come to blows and let's not allow our herdsmen to do the same. Let's figure this thing out between us and I will make an offer to you that is too good for you to refuse. You look around and determine which direction you want to go, and I will turn from you and go in the opposite direction, for the land cannot simply hold the both of us together." Lot seized immediately on this great opportunity and begins to, it says in verse 10, "And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before Yahweh destroyed Sodom and Amorah, like the garden of Yahweh, like the land of Mitzrayim as you go toward Soar." So it says then that Lot chose for himself all the plain of the Jordan, and Lot moved east. Thus they separated from each other. Now, what Lot did in lifting up his eyes, this word lifted up, is from the same root as the Torah portion word nasol that we've recently had, where one's head is lifted in order that they might be counted, that they might be seen for who they are. And so we find then that as Lot lifts up his eyes, he does so in a limited level, in a very limited plane. He looks at what is currently the best choice. The grass is green, the fields are lush, the water is plentiful, and if he needs anything that he can't manufacture out of his own camp, the cities of the plain are in front of him, and certainly a day's journey or so would bring him to an environment where he could probably buy anything that he wanted. Everything seemed to be to make this the perfect choice. Now, for anyone who has been down toward the Dead Sea area and seen the desolation, the abject and absolute barrenness of that terrain, there is nothing there that would suggest anyone would ever want to put hot flocks or herds or towns or city or people anywhere in that environment. But that's the same area that at one time is described here in Scripture as being like the Garden of Eden, like the Garden of Yahweh before man was brought out of that and before the cities were destroyed. When Yah made an end of these cities on the plain, he did a thorough job and has not been inhabited since. Lot seemed to make the best choice, but his vision was temporary. It was temporal. It was limited, and he wasn't seeing things that were yet to come. Now, it would seem then that Avram would be left with the far lesser end of the deal and that he would just have to take leftovers from Lot. But that's not so. In verse 14, it says, "And after Lot had separated from him, Yahweh said to Avram, 'Now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward, eastward and westward.'" That's verse 14. Verse 15, "For all the land which you see, I shall give to you and your seed forever." Excuse me. Yah offered an opportunity then for Avram to have a different vision and a different perspective. Now, I don't know what the land looked like at that particular time. I've been in and around the general area, and I'm not exactly sure what vantage point that he was standing on and where he was looking. But as far as he could see in all four directions, Yah says, "This is your land. This land belongs to you and to your descendants, and it will do so forever." It is understood in rabbinical thought that Avram not only was looking on the physical plains and mountains, valleys that were in front of him, but he was also seeing things into the spirit realm, that he was seeing into the future. And that is that he saw the kingdoms that were yet to come, and that he saw the masses of exiles that would soon be returning home. Perhaps that's true. But he lifted up his vision. And again, it's very interesting that when Yah says to him to lift up his eyes, that it's from the same root, from the same root of Nasol. He is also to be lifted up. that is in his vision. But he did not see things in a temporal way, but in a spiritual way. He elevated his vision higher than what Lot could see. Now, this elevated vision comes by invitation. But whether you look on the temporal plane and that which is immediate and in close proximity to your horizon, or whether you're looking far off into the spiritual distant future and looking at seeing what's before you, either way, not so, you're going to have your head lifted up and you're going to be held accountable for your vision. You know, you can't walk in my vision. You can't walk into things that the Father may have called me to. Likewise, I have no ability to walk where you're walking, to do what it is that maybe you're doing and to face what it is that you are individually facing. But the Father has organized you and I and placed you and I where we need to be, called to do what it is that we need to do. And he has facilitated us. He has wired us. He has gifted you and I strategically in order to get the vision done. There's a couple of three things that I want to share with you before we get to the end of the program today that I find very important here. Number one, that is that you are not indiscriminately made. And by that, what I mean is that Yah did not cause you to be an afterthought. Dr. Miles Monroe does a teaching that I have found to be extremely helpful and very fascinating. And I'm so sorry to hear that this man is no longer with us. But he gave a valuable teaching about why men need visions and dreams. And in that particular teaching, he began to describe how that the Father first creates the end, the destiny, the destined point. That is the ultimate goal that needs to be reached and accomplished. And he has the final work in mind before he ever comes back to where you and I were birthed or even conceived in our mother's womb. And there at that moment, the strategic soul that you and I are, uniquely gifted, qualified, enabled, challenged, even those things that we feel like that physically or otherwise that we lack, those things are but challenges for you and I to overcome. He then sets you and I on the path to reach our destiny. And as long as we keep our eyes on the prize and we discern what that destiny is, if you and I can figure out what it is that we're called to, why we're living where we live, why we're doing what we're doing, how it is that we believe what we believe, what is it that our core values are, what is it that we know absolutely is the truth, what is the abilities that we have, what are the challenges that we have, how do they mold us and begin to propel us forward? You know, the challenges may be but a speedometer and enabling you and I not to go too fast. But our abilities enable you and I not to lag behind. So there has to be those things in balance to where our challenges are overcome and enable us to pick up speed. But we do so with wisdom and with experience and through prayer and through the working of his gifting, through the voice of the Ruach saying, turn right or left or move now. It's time to pick up and go and follow the cloud. All of these things are important in that they get us toward our destiny. When Avram lifted up his eyes, he not only saw his future, he saw his future generation's future. So you and I cannot limit ourselves lest we also limit our future generations. Our children, grandchildren, and their grandchildren are dependent upon you and I to make the right choices here and now, so that the blessing of future generations may be established by our faithfulness and our current walk. Otherwise, we may find ourselves in that horrible situation that the Torah describes, where you and I are causing curses that will go to the third and the fourth generation due to our disobedience. So the choice is ours. Lot lifted up his eyes in a very limited vein, and at some point, his wife would have encouraged him, my imagination here, my thought, that she got tired of living with flocks, herds, and in a tent when a city was available. And if they would only divest themselves of all of these holdings and animals and servants, then if they sold them off, they would have enough money to move into town, live in a city, be protected by walls, have the status of being wealthy in a city of the plain. Life could be good. It doesn't take very much reading after this point to realize that that may not have been. Absolutely, it was not the right decision and the most wise choice. He would have been much better off to stay out in the plain. But the scripture says that he pitched his tents towards Sodom. So every morning when he got up and he walked out the tent door, what he saw on his horizon was the cities of the plain. They were beckoning and calling to him. Wherever your vision is cast, whatever is on that horizon ultimately will become what is your current status. And if you don't like what you see on the horizon, you need to make a different choice and start facing a different direction. Let me tell you a very, very quick personal story. When I was in my middle teens, I had a cousin that I spent a great deal of time with. We played in the woods, out in the creeks, and we got in trouble together. We ventured together, adventured together, and spent a great deal of time in our youth together. My mom very, very wisely challenged me in my mid-teens and asked me, where do you think your cousin's going to be in the next 5 years? And I knew by the anger that motivated him and by the recklessness by which he made his choices, I said, he's either going to be in jail or worse, he could be dead. My mom looked at me and said, if you don't want to be where he's going to be in the next 5 years, you've got to stop hanging out with him now. And as painful as it was to cut the ties and to move on and to find new relationships and look at a different path, I knew that what she said was some of the most wise words that I had ever heard. And I certainly did not want to be where he was going. I made a different choice. I walked a different path. I left him in the cities of the plain looking towards Sodom and Gomorrah, and I turned around and made a different choice. My mom must have been a prophetess, because within 5 years, my cousin was in prison. And in his adult life, he's never really had anything, accomplished anything, or achieved anything. Because I made a different choice, my life in a lot of ways has been one to be envied. And for that, I'm extremely thankful, because it wasn't so much the choices that I made, I myself, but those that wise people around me helped me to see and to make the right choice. So Avram lifted up his eyes and he saw something different. He saw then that he was gifted and qualified. He was not indiscriminately made. He was made to live out in this nomadic fashion, to walk toward a city whose builder and maker was Elohim. And let me tell you that not only are you not indiscriminately made, you're not indiscriminately destined. You and I are not called to simply meander around through life, wandering from one location to the other, and taking life as it seems to present itself. Que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. That's not us. That's not who we are. That's not what we're called to be. Yah has a destiny for you and I already chosen and in mind. And it is up to you and I then to seek him until he reveals what that is. You would think, well, you know, certainly this is something you, Barry, have already lived by it for the last 6 months. I knew that I was called to ministry. I knew that I was called to preach, to teach. I've been enabled and gifted to do music and to lead worship, and for that I'm extremely thankful. I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a grandfather, I have friends, I have responsibilities. But that's not necessarily my destiny. Over the last 6 months, I began to realize that I was thinking in very limited fashions and very small fashions. And because of that, the results of my endeavors were also limited and small. I was challenged in prayer, lift up your vision higher, elevate your vision, elevate your mind, open your mind. begin to see and to think about things that are bigger than what you've already experienced and currently are walking in, because I've heard his voice say, I want to do bigger things in you. Your small thinking is limiting me. I'm beginning to realize that perhaps there is a destiny and line for me that I need to be asking him about, that there may be some things that are important that I need to learn. You know, just because we have a destiny doesn't mean that we're automatically going to get there. There are lessons learned. There are challenges to be met and overcome. There are things that have to be embraced. And like Lot, there are things that have to be let go. I had a cousin. Abraham had Lot. Lot's name means veil or covering. I find it amazing that while Lot was with Abram, his vision was limited and he was just handling whatever came to him. There's a famine. Let's go to Mitzrayim. Now we got problems in Mitzrayim. I got to get out of this mess. We get out of Mitzrayim. Now I got another problem. He was just simply facing one problem after the other, one challenge after the other, and letting that dictate to him what his life and his course was going to be. He was about to do the same thing when Yah challenged him. It's not just an about face from Lot. You're not running from a problem. You're running toward a future and a destiny. Avram, lift up your eyes and catch hold of the vision that I'm wanting to give to you, and then make decisive choices to get you to that place. You and I have got to learn what is necessary to get us to our destiny. That means reading books. That means listening to other broadcasters. That means listening to teaching tapes. That means digging. That means prayer. That means searching, seeking wise counsel, and finding out what it is that you need to grasp and believe for and overcome in order to be able to grab on to. Final point here. Yah said to Avram, for all the land which you see, I shall give to you. I've heard something in that line that has shook me and is still shaking me. And from that line, what I'm hearing Yah say to me is, you have to see it before you can receive it. Now, I'm not talking about uber faith here and some of the faulty teaching on faith. You speak a word and it just has to come to pass well because you said it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about beginning to open your heart, your mind, and your vision to a place where the Father can help you to see what it is that He is seeing. That we catch the same line of understanding and perspective that He has. I prayed this prayer in December of 2000, how that I wanted to see what Yeshua was seeing when he opened up my perspective to his line of vision while standing on Ben Yehuda Street in Jerusalem. My life and the life of my family was changed. He took off my Greco-Roman westernized glasses and gave me Hebrew understanding and perspective. He helped me to understand the Torah. And it has been life-changing for us. It's time again to lift our vision and to see it. To see what? Whatever it is that the Father is wanting to show us. If I can't see it, if I can't envision it, if somehow I can't imagine it in my mind and have that vision sown as a seed in my spirit, neither will I receive it, because it will remain to me unknown. But we're being encouraged to look for the evidence of things hoped for, the things hoped for, and the evidence of things not seen. I believe we can do this. Catch a vision, lift your vision higher. This is Barry with Reconnect. Until next week, Shalom.